Welcome back to the High Functioning Disaster, the show where we stop pretending life is neat and talk honestly about the chaos we're all navigating. I'm your host, Sasha Holder. In part three of my conversation with Zilma Williams, the swearing therapist, she gets into the messy middle of growth, how a workplace no and not being heard pushed her to found Dragonfly Therapy Services. Why boundaries and an abundance mindset shaped a business she actually wants, and what happens when you stop apologizing for the schedule and life that keep you healthy. We also dig into reframing I'm a failure, and Zilma walks us through her courtroom-style thought challenge, gathering evidence for, evidence against, asking what a friend would say, and checking whether it will matter in a month, in a year, or in 5 years. It's practical, it's tender, and yes, there will be a few swear words and a whole lot of truth. Let's get into it. You said setbacks are part of success, and they are. Can you share a story where what felt like failure actually became a breakthrough?
So when I became independently licensed, so after my master's degree, and, you know, I had to do 3,000 hours for my internship in order to qualify to take the test, and then I become independently licensed, and then I can, once you are independently licensed, there is a lot more that you can do with your career rather than being in community mental health. But so once I became independently licensed, I was telling the clinical director at a mental health agency that, look, I don't want to work with couples, and I don't want to work, because with couples, it's like, you need individual therapy and you need individual therapy. What the fuck are you doing in my office? You know, like, yeah, you're not going to fucking agree. That was my experience with couples and I didn't like it. I don't connect with that. So I was like, don't give me couples. I don't want to do mood disorders. I don't want to do personalities. Here comes a couple because they speak Spanish. Which part of don't fucking give me couples didn't you understand? Like, how is it my fucking problem that I'm the only bilingual therapist that you have? So, because I felt like I was not being heard, like what I was saying didn't, I went on and created my own agency. That's how Dragonfly Therapy Services was born. Because I'm like, okay, if you are not listening. Okay. I want to work with disciplined adults who experience trauma, anxiety, and depression. Agency number one didn't give me that. Agency number two didn't give me that. Agency number three. Okay. Then I'm going to create my own fucking agency. As simple as that. Now, was it a lot of work? Yes. And I didn't know when I started my business how complicated the business side was going to be. Because in a school, we're being prepared to be employees of in the mental health agency, not to have our own business. I didn't have one business class in my master. So we are being groomed to be an employee forever, right? Or a contractor for someone else. You work for someone else. So I created Dragonfly Therapy Services. I chose Dragonfly as a name because dragonflies represent the change that comes from the inside. The dragonflies, they fly on the surface of the water and they eat all the bacteria on the surface so the light can come in. So I'm like, that was very significant for me. And once I created my agency, I see clients on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays from 12 to 6. So I give myself a 4-day weekend every week. And my first client is at noon because I'm not a morning person. So thank you for fucking not listening, because that pushed me to create my own agency. And I'm so proud of that, because like I have colleagues who went into private practice and they're working 60 hours a week. Why? Like, you know, but I understand we have different goals. I'm not here for the money. I want to be able to live off of my work, but I'm not, my goal is not to make $1 million. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, yeah, I'll see clients use it once it's Thursday. So when I have a client who, and I don't apologize for my schedule, because if you want that doctor to do the surgery in, you want to work, you want that doctor to do it, and he only has a fucking appointment on Wednesday at 3, you're going to make it work. So if you want to work with me, you don't get this at fucking 8 o'clock in the morning. You don't. You're like, oh, I love your energy. No, you don't get this fucking thing at 8 o'clock. You love that energy right now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I'm not a morning person either. I've never been a morning person, so I totally get
it. So you understand, right? So if I have somebody that says, oh, Monday at 8 o'clock works for me, okay, I'll give you a referral. Well, no, but I want to work with you. Okay, my schedule is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 12 to 6. Last appointment at 5. So if you really want to work with me, you're going to make it work. You know? Like, as simple as that. Like, I don't fucking apologize. So because the client has direct access to the therapist in most cases, like if you're in private practice, you're going to talk with me. I don't have a receptionist. I don't have, right, an assistant. So it's kind of like, oh, well, like they think that they can, they are not going to ask the fucking doctor to see them on Monday at 8 because they are not fucking talking to the doctor. The doctor has a lot of barriers. You talk to the receptionist, you talk to the scheduler, you talk to the MA. By the time you get to the doctor, you have to talk to 3 people. With me, you're talking directly with me. Okay, the answer is still no. Like,
I love that you don't apologize for making yourself a priority, what you need.
For what works for me, because then I can show up like this to my client, but I don't show up like this on Monday at 8. And also, because eventually I'm going to resent you when I had to fucking get up at 6:30 in the morning to be ready for you. And if you don't show up, I'm going to resent you even more. So to avoid all that, it's like Wednesday at 3. That's what I have available. Right? Because we bend backwards for other people and then we resent them when we don't get what we are expecting of them. But really, the decision to bend backwards was yours. And in a lot of cases, me modifying my schedule for you and taking the Monday at 8 o'clock appointment comes from a scarcity mindset. I have an abundance mindset where it's like, if it's not this client on Monday at 8, it's going to be another client who can come on Wednesday at 3. I don't take it personal. I'll give you referrals. Like, I don't apologize. And I don't want you to change either, but you want to work with me, it's not going to be on Monday at 8. It's just not possible.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, again, I'm not a morning person either, but to your point, I mean, it could be they want to work with you on Wednesday at 3, but if you're not in on Wednesdays at 3, then you wouldn't be able to meet with them. How do you help people reframe their own setbacks so that they see growth instead of failure? And then what would you say to someone who feels like they failed too many times to keep trying?
So I have this exercise. So when you feel you're a failure, it comes from a thought. So thought creates feelings and feelings create behaviors, right? And so when we're in this circle, so we identified this thought, I'm a failure, right? And we kind of like put that thought on trial on the witness stand, and we are going to ask these questions. All the questions are based on that statement, I'm a failure. So the first question is there evidence for that statement? Well, yes, because I fuck up at work and, you know, I made a huge mistake and I'm never learning and blah, blah, blah. Right? So you write down all those answers. And I actually tell people to actually write it down and then take a picture of it, because the negative thoughts are recurrent. It's not like you think I'm a failure one time. You think I'm a failure several times. So again, no need to reinvent the wheel. Fucking take a picture, because you already did the work. You know, I made the answer, so you don't have to do it all over. So the first question is there evidence for this statement? So you write down the evidence. Because that's going to be so easy, because that's why you are feeling that you're a failure, those thoughts, because I fuck up, I made a mistake, blah, blah, blah. The second question is there evidence contrary to this statement? Well, I've been at this job for a year, and I don't make mistakes very often, and I showed up on time, and I actually have good reviews, and my supervisor praise me, blah, 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 right? You write that down. So the next question is, am I attempting to assert this without all the evidence? And the answer is yes, because you just put evidence on favor and evidence against. Then the next question is, what will a friend think about this statement? Well, a friend will say, we all make mistakes. It's okay. You learn from it. You do better next time. You're not a failure. And then the next question is, will this matter in 1 month, in 1 year, in 5 years? Right? So once you answer all the questions, you reread the answers, and then it's like the statement cannot stand, right? You actually challenge, it's called identifying and challenging the negative thought, because it's like the thought cannot stand. So then, and that's why I say take a picture, because the next time you think I'm a failure, or you feel I'm a failure, like, you fucking reread it, like... And you're going to remind yourself why you cannot stand, right? So, because first of all, again, when I say I'm a failure, all of me is a failure. So I cannot, nothing is positive. And it's like, no, I made a mistake at work, right? Or my partner is upset with me. I'm the worst person ever, right? Like, so it's like, okay. We fucking talk about it. Wait, you know, there are a lot of things that my partner loves about me. So it's like, okay, this particular fucking thing pisses him off. A lot of other, right? So by answering each question, then that statement is not valid. And it's not valid because it's not true. So that's why we shouldn't believe our thoughts, because they're not based on facts. Like, you know, our feelings, because they're not based on facts. Because when you say I'm a failure, oh, so that means that you cannot do anything right at work. Is that true? Well, no, I made a mistake, one mistake. And it may be a huge mistake, but there are a lot of other fucking things that you do right. Otherwise, you wouldn't keep the job. So that can apply to why do I keep failing in a lot of areas? So you identify each area, then you feel you're a failure and you answer those questions. And again, like when I do this with the client, I don't do it for them. We do it together in session, but they are answering their own questions. The questions. I don't, because it doesn't matter what I believe. Because if you don't see it yourself, it doesn't, oh, I believe in you. Like, yeah, that helps to a certain extent. But if you don't believe in yourself, you know, like, so when you come out with your own answers, then it's different because this is your fucking shit. Like, you know?
That is,
I can see your wheels turning. Tell me.
They are. Yeah. So my brain is going, if you can't see it or if you're not willing to see it, then what's the point? Like, I mean, and that's probably why I'm not a therapist.
No, but that is a great point. But that's something that will work for you in order to go to therapy, right? To start therapy. Like, okay, I need help with this. But, you know, for other people, sometimes it's so hard for them to identify the things contrary to the statement. And I'll give suggestions, but eventually it's like, oh, like, for example, I'm lazy, right? If you're a mom, it's impossible that you're fucking lazy. Impossible, because you're responsible. If you're a good mom, right? Like, you're going to be responsible for all this little shit. So it's like, did you do laundry? Did you cook breakfast? So although you are taking it as, well, that's my responsibility, but that is not sustaining the feeling that you are lazy. So I'm just showing you what I see from my perspective, but I'm not there. Like, I don't know if you fucking cook breakfast. You don't. I don't live with you, right? So, because you might not cook breakfast. So, but the thing is that sometimes we do shit on autopilot, so we don't consider them like, oh, like, you know, so what is an active person, right? Like, so I can go the opposite. If you consider yourself lazy, someone who exercises every day, goes to work, does this, that. Okay. So do you exercise every day? No. Do you go to work every day? Yes. Do you do the chores at home? Yes. Like, okay. So because you don't exercise every day, you are calling yourself lazy and discounting everything else that you are admiring in an active person. How does that work for Sasha but doesn't work for Zulma? Explain that to me. Because when it's for me, my expectations of myself are so unrealistic. But when it's for someone else, it's like, so one time my therapist said I was having some body image issues. So she said, if you see someone like you in the lobby, what would you think of that person? I'm like, oh, that they're healthy. And she said, oh, so then why are you fat? Why do you think you're fat? Bitch! Like, because me, I was fat, but another person who looked like me was healthy. Excuse you?
It's very interesting how we see.
My therapist is the best. Like, I was like, you're a fucking bitch. Like, you know, but it's true.
And it's interesting how we see ourselves differently from other people, even if in this example, they have the same body type.
Right.
And we judge ourselves more harshly.
Right. And my theory about why we are so hard on ourselves is because Like if we treat our best friend the way that we are treating ourselves, we wouldn't have a best friend. So my theory is that because we cannot get away from ourselves, so we abuse ourselves, because where the fuck are you going to go? Right? Like another person will be like, fuck you, I'm not going to accept this treatment. But when I'm being so hard on myself, calling myself names, calling myself lazy, fat, ugly, or whatever, you name it, where the fuck I'm going to go away from myself? So we are kind of like in that circle. That's why it's so important that we are kind to ourselves, because we are our worst enemies. And it's like you wouldn't treat your best friend. You wouldn't say to your best friend the shit that you say to yourself on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
So
not.
Let's try with kind things instead of like being assholes to ourselves simply because we cannot go away from, you cannot go away from you. Right? Like, which is what perpetrators do to children when they are abusing children, right? Like they are more powerful than children, and they cannot defend themselves. So is that we are doing that to ourselves on a daily basis.
So I want to shift then to grief, loss, and how you keep it real.
Mm-hmm.
Grief is so often misunderstood. How do you define it beyond just death and loss?
In a nutshell, grief is love that has nowhere to go. If you didn't love that person, you wouldn't be grieving. So that's it. That's what grief is. It's love that has nowhere to go. So when you start, like, you know, if you lost a loved one and you're like, I didn't say I love you. And that's, you know, going back to what I said before. So you learn from that and you start saying, so if you didn't say I love you to your mom enough, you learn from that and you start saying I love you to everybody that you can. Because I can say I love you because you're in front of me. So I learn from that and then I start using it in my daily life. Because I cannot go back to mom, but I can take that and start applying it. So when I lose this person, I don't have the same regrets. I believe that our loved ones live, they continue to be like, I lost both my parents. And when I just go like this and I'm like, okay, mama, like, what do you have to say about blah, blah, blah. Right. But I'm at peace because my mom, she suffered from depression. So when she passed, I felt at peace because she stopped suffering. So I'm like, why am I so fucking selfish that I want you here no matter what you are going through? While I can have you here anywhere that I go, my mom is with me. My dad is with me. So it's like, they, to me, they change form. They're not like the body to me is like my mom, she passed away in her own home, in her own bed, which is what she wanted. She had a heart attack and she passed. I didn't want to see her. I didn't want to see the body. I wanted to remember her like this, like having coffee and gossiping about, you know, whatever was going on in the country at the time. I want to have that memory, not her in her bed. So everybody was seeing her and they were like, she looks like she's sleeping. I don't care how the fuck she looks. Like, I want to remember her when we were having coffee and talking shit about people. That's a memory. That's the last memory I have. That's a memory I want to keep. So we need to find what works for us, because like we are so stigmatized with what, you know, grieving doesn't have a time. Like, well, it's been 2 years. Like, okay, if you're over it, like more power to you. But we don't get over the pain. We move forward with it. So the pain is the same, but we become stronger. So it's not like the pain diminishes, it is smaller. We become stronger. So there is this illustration is so powerful. It's a black ball and it's three jars, kind of like mason jars. And one is little, and then one is, the ball is a little bigger, and then it's super big. And then underneath that, that's what we believe the grief is. And then the other one is, no, I'm sorry. The big one first, the middle one, and the lower one. And then underneath is the jar. The ball is the same size, but the jar is bigger because we become strong. The pain remains the same, but we become stronger. But when we realize that I have all this love that has nowhere to, I can direct that love to the people who surround me, but I can direct that love to myself because I need it more than ever because I'm suffering. I'm in pain. And eventually, we are going to be able to have the good memories, and they're going to overpower the pain. So I create rituals for my mom, for example. Her birthday is November 8th, and she loves flowers. So I buy flowers, and I give the flowers to somebody in her honor.
That's beautiful.
So one time, this poor lady, I'm sure I fucking traumatized the shit out of her. I was at Walmart and I bought the flowers, and then I came out, and this lady, she had, my mom had a green thumb. Like, she will grab one leaf from a plant and she will make the fucking plant. I fucking look at the fucking thing and I kill it, right? And so I bought the flowers, and there was this lady, she had soil and flowers and plants, you know, to be planted. So I follow her and I said, I'm so sorry to bother you. Would you take these flowers? And I kind of presented the flowers, and she was kind of like, you know, backing away. And I said, today is my mom's birthday and she passed away. And the reason why I chose you is because you have soil and plants, and my mom had a green thumb. Oh my God. She was like, oh my God, like, I'm here. Let me give you a hug. First, she was like, who the fuck is this fucking crazy bitch? And then she was like, this is so beautiful. You know, so I'm like, okay, I'm not going to traumatize the strangers. I'm going to give it to my friends, the flowers, you know. But the main thing I want to illustrate is that it could be the same fucking flowers that you bought the day before, but you are doing it to honor that person. So what is different is the intention behind it. So, like, for example, go to the person's favorite restaurant and order the favorite dish, or have a beer in their honor, or watch the game for their team, whatever it might be. But you are doing it to honor them. And you don't even have to say it, right? Like, it's like, this is between you and you. So I explained it to the lady because I'm like, I'm a fucking stranger giving flowers away. But like, if he's my friend, I can bring the flowers. And if I don't feel like sharing, I don't have to. But if, you know, I don't mind sharing because I'm like, oh, this is my mom's birthday. These flowers are in her honor. And I chose you to receive. Because I used to send her flowers to Argentina and she loved them. So I know that she loves that, right? So, like, my dad, he was such a cheater when we were playing cards, any kind of game, like, he would fucking cheat. So when I'm playing games with my friends and they, you know, like, somebody makes a mistake or whatever, and I'm like, okay, Antonio, that's my dad's name. So that's how I'm honoring him. And like Antonio will be proud, you know, you didn't cheat or whatever. Because he needed to win no matter what. Like he cheated against his fucking 5-year-old granddaughter. Like he cheated, like break up with, I'm like, sir, what the fuck is wrong with you? But that's who my dad is. So that's how I honor him, by talking about him when we are playing games. Because that's what I will do with him. Right? Like we will play, it doesn't matter what kind of game we will play. And every time my dad dealt the cards, all the powerful cards came out. I'm like, really? What a coincidence. It's a coincidence. What a coincidence. Every fucking time you deal, the fucking cards come up. When I deal, they don't come up. Like, I don't know how the fuck he did it, but or we will play backgammon and he will put the chip in the wrong one, but it was more convenient for him. I'm like, excuse you. That's 5, not 6. Oh, I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you did. I had to be like fucking paid. And that's why I don't cheat. Because I hated that my dad cheated. But now that he's not cheating anymore, that's how I honor him, by telling the stories about him. Like, you know, like if I'm playing cards with my friend and I get up and I'm like, don't cheat, Antonio. No, no, I'm not going to cheat, right? Like, and that's how I keep them alive. Mm-hmm. Because to me, they're right here. So take that love that has nowhere to go and give it to yourself.
That is a really wonderful suggestion and something that I found that I do sometimes. So like my dad was really into NASCAR. That is not my interest, but I have watched NASCAR just because my dad liked it.
He liked it. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So when you do it, you do it to honor him, right? It's like, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what are some other ways that you encourage people to honor their grief without being swallowed by it?
To embrace it, to realize that it's there, to not escape from them. Don't run away from it, because you can run, but you can hide. To normalize it. One day you're going to be okay. One day you don't want to leave the bed. It is the day that you're okay is okay. And the day that you don't want to leave the bed is okay too. So it's kind of like a roller coaster grief. And it is not linear. And there is no straight answer. So it's like, okay, you are feeling down today. Honor that. You're feeling better today. Honor that too. And to realize and give yourself permission to feel your feelings without apologizing for them. You know, it's like a lot of times we don't cry in front of our kids because not fucking 24/7, but it's okay that you cry in front of your children and you can explain to your children that you are feeling sad, because that gives them permission to feel sad. Because if you're strong all the time, then they believe that they don't have to be sad, or they don't give themselves permission to be sad. And say, yeah, it's okay to say that you are sad. It's okay that, you know, like if you are feeling particularly blue one day, you can say, you know, like I miss grandma a lot and I'm sad, and it's okay. But you don't need to worry about it. Like, I have a big feeling today. And that's it, right? Like you normalize it for them too. So it's like, just don't judge your feelings. Whatever is coming up is what is supposed to be there. And again, you don't have to do it alone. If you can join a group, if you can go to therapy, like, and especially we are in September is Suicide Awareness Month. And if somebody dies to complete suicide, is like there is a lot of guilt and a lot of unanswered questions. And could I have done? Could I have saved them? And it's not. That's not what your loved one would want for you. That you torture yourself because of their decision. If they wanted to live, they would be alive right now. So it's not for you to decide. Like, there is nothing that you could have done differently. And also to realize that there are things that we don't understand. I dealt with suicidal ideation for a long time. And my thing was, the thing that kept me alive were two things. One, my work ethic, which I got from my dad. Like, oh, I cannot fucking kill myself because I had to go to work tomorrow. And the other thing was that I wouldn't want my mom to feel that pain and guilt. So those two things kept me alive. So whatever you can put in your mind and in your heart that is going to allow you to wake up tomorrow, do it, because I'm glad that I didn't kill myself. But at the time, it wasn't so much. I think a lot of times, and if anybody is experiencing suicidal ideation, by all means, please reach out to somebody. But a lot of times, it's not so much that we want to die, it's that we want the pain to stop. But we are in such a black and white that it's like, okay, if I want the pain to stop, then I shouldn't be breathing, basically. No, there are other ways of managing the pain. And now, 20 years later, 30 years later, 40 years later, 5 years later, I look back and I'm like, I'm glad that I didn't act on my feelings at the time. But they were so very real when I was having them. So it's like, okay, suicide doesn't take the pain away. It just gives it to someone else.
That's a wrap on part three of my conversation with Zulma Williams, the swearing therapist. I am so thankful to Zulma for naming the grit it takes to build a life you actually want and for giving us a clear way to put our harshest thoughts on the witness stand. If this episode helped you, share it with a friend. And go follow The Swearing Therapist on Instagram for straight talk tips and tools on anxiety, depression, and healing. You can also find Zulma at dragonflytherapy.net and on her podcast, Keeping It Real with Zulma, The Swearing Therapist. And make sure you're subscribed to The High Functioning Disaster, because part four is powerful. We move into grief and staying, how to survive the hardest hours by taking life in 15-minute increments. We also talk about how grief shows up beyond death, in divorce, lost jobs, and burned down dreams, plus why finding the right therapy fit matters, and the one truth she wants everyone on the fence to hear: you deserve your well-being. As a reminder, my conversation with Zulma does include discussions on grief, suicidal ideation, and loss. So take care of yourself. Thanks for listening to The High Functioning Disaster. Life may be messy, but we don't have to clean it up alone. See you next time. Oh, and one last thing. The content shared on The High Functioning Disaster is for informational and conversational purposes only and is not intended as professional, medical, or mental health advice. Everyone's situation is unique, and what we talk about here may not apply to your specific circumstances. Please do what's right for you and always consult with a qualified professional for medical, mental health, financial, or legal guidance. You take care of you, boo. See you next time.